Welcome to our KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast Series, delivering fresh insights and perspectives around major accounting and financial developments on ESG reporting. We thank you for joining today.
Hello, everyone. I'm excited to be back to share our ESG reporting top five going into 2023. My name is Mara Hodge, and I'm KPMG's ESG audit leader in the U.S. My background is in financial statement audits, and I've been an audit partner for the past 6 years, signing 10Ks as well as IPOs, but I also have a decade of experience with sustainability assurance. And today, I spend most of my time speaking with management, the C-suite, and boards, and I track trends of public and private companies around ESG reporting. I'm joined today by Julie Santoro. She's an audit partner in KPMG's Department of Professional Practice, and I always look to her for clear, concise, and visually appealing information that KPMG produces on ESG regulations. She tracks the SEC, the European Union, and the ISSB, and I'm excited to hear what she has to say today. And finally, we're asking Anita Chan to join us today. She's an audit partner that recently came back to KPMG from a 2-year fellowship at the SEC. Prior to that, she worked with me on a number of sustainability assurance engagements, and I'm really excited for her insights on how to put the regulations that Julie is following into practice this coming year. Our top five for 2023 will first focus on SEC filings, and that will include SEC comment letter trends around ESG and how to think about disclosure control procedures over ESG information in your 10K. From there, we'll widen the aperture and talk about the investment companies are budgeting for, how international regulations may impact that investment need, and then finally, leave you with some practical recommendations on how you can move forward. So without further ado, let's jump in with number one. Julie, what trends are we seeing in SEC comment letters related to ESG?
Well, it all began when the SEC staff issued a comment letter sample in September 2021 that really showed a broad range of questions based on the 2010 climate-related disclosures guidance that had been issued. So this has nothing to do with the SEC's final rule that's coming. Since there, we've seen about 70 issuers get questions and around 470 comments. And this year end, I definitely expect further scrutiny of what's in filings. So here's my top three standout questions coming from the SEC staff. Number one, why did you disclose X in your ESG report, but we don't see anything in your filings? Over 90% of issuers have received that question. If you're in the finance department and you have not yet read your company's ESG report, definitely you want to do that. Question number two, your carbon credits or offsets, how are you using them in your business and how are you doing the accounting for them? So absent the FASB project and specific accounting guidance, this might not be so material for you yet, but you've got to be ready to be able to answer those questions. So definitely time to investigate what your company is doing with credits and offsets. And my number three pick is questions about business trends. How are you seeing your business affected by climate-related trends? How are consumers, your customers, changing their preferences, et cetera? And how is this going to affect you going forward? So my advice after those three top picks is use the sample letter to prepare yourself this year end and the questions you're going to get.
Thanks for those three trends, Julie. I think they're really great flags to be looking out for and some good advice to follow. Clearly, the SEC is watching and management needs to heighten their focus on their ESG information. I often recommend in these cases using processes and functions, but just adding an ESG lens. So number two of our top five is on how might the SEC reporting do just that. Anita, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, sure, Maura. Happy to share my thoughts here. I think when we think about ESG information making their way into the SEC filing, DCP, Disclosure Controls and Procedures, is definitely a critical aspect. Because to your point of leveraging existing processes and controls, it can really help bring some level of rigor to the information that's needed in the filing, just like how current financial statement teams are doing. So as a first step, I definitely think it's important to establish a cross-functional team when you design your DCP, because that really helps make sure your processes and controls are comprehensive enough. And I think I would encourage our listeners today to think beyond the obvious groups of the financial reporting team members, as well as sustainability team members, because there's also folks like legal group, investor relations, as well as those in the operations who should be taken into consideration and included in that cross-functional team. Now, when you actually start designing the controls and procedures to add that ESG lens, I want to highlight three topics that might be helpful in considering. The first is materiality. I think when looking at the inventory of ESG information that your company has in the public domain, and which one of those should be making their ways into the SEC filing or not, materiality is the crux of the question. And I think we all know it's not an easy answer for that. But I think the SEC comment letters that Julie just talked about, the staff has really shared nuggets in there that you can look to help you think about how materiality of information should be considered. So I'll leave you with an important reminder that think beyond the quantitative assessment, but really think about the qualitative considerations as to what might be material for a reader or an investor to make a decision useful. Now, the second element I think we should think about is the timing gap. I think when designing your controls and procedures around ESG information, there should be an element in the controls and procedures that capture ongoing assessment of the information. I think this is particularly important because, as many of us know, sustainability information is often not available for a period of time after the SEC filing is completed. So that ongoing feedback loop, looking at what might be material changes to the information for building into your year-end SEC filing, is very important. And lastly, I would recommend keeping in mind the broad concept of transparency. To make that tactical, I'll leave you with two aspects of that. First, probably a little bit more of the obvious side, transparency for our investors. You want to make sure the controls and procedures that you're designing has an element to allow you and your team to step back and think holistically of the information that you're sharing with the investors and the readers, and that the story itself is syncing up between what the company's actually doing from the operations perspective and action, as well as the strategy that you have announced you're trying to implement. The other aspect that might not be as obvious, but I also think is critical, is transparency of the communication amongst the different divisions. So going back to that cross-functional team that I just touched upon, think about making sure there's no silos between communication so that everybody can share the information necessary to make sure that's a complete and comprehensive disclosure controls and procedures.
Thanks, Anita and Julie. So we've heard about what to think about as you go into your 10K prep. And for number three, I'm now going to zoom out a bit and take a wider view. One of the biggest points of conversation that I'm having with clients today and things that they're working on is really setting their budgets and understanding how much investment is going to be needed for fiscal year 2023 and beyond. So I break it down into three different types of costs that are expected as you think about how to build out this budget. The first is around employees and human resources. Second are outside consultants and how you'll use them. And then thirdly, any software or technology that you'll be implementing. When we talk about the employees or the human resource side, we first have to make a decision about whether or not we'll have dedicated full-time individuals in certain roles, or if you'll use part-time people and employees to accomplish certain tasks. With the dedicated and full-time people, typically in the past, we've seen that be one or two people in a sustainability department responsible for putting together a 150-page sustainability report. However, what we're starting to see today is that somewhere between 2 and 10 finance professionals are actually dedicating full-time to documentation, understanding of process, implementing of controls, and really trying to bring additional levels of rigor over ESG information. We then continue to see the use of part-time, maybe 10 to 50% of other people's time across all those different divisions and across those functions that Anita spoke about, because we still need them to do some of the basic data collection, to actually monitor information as it's coming up through the chain, and really to be able to provide the contextual information around the data that's being collected. Second, outside consultants are often being used to do gap assessments early on, whether that's to understand what existing reporting you have today against the regulations that are to come, or really to understand what a target operating model for your ESG reporting might look like and how you can close those gaps to get there. Outside consultants are also weighing in on governance systems. They're supplementing the documentation needs that you might have as a company. Basically, anything that you've identified that needs to be done and you don't have internal resources for, outside consultants can help. And really, what's beneficial about that is that they bring their perspective from the other companies that they're working with. So you have insights into what peers and other companies are doing. And lastly, software and technology. Everyone asks me if there's a silver bullet around this, and unfortunately, there is not. However, I think that we can break it down into about four general types of systems that you can consider implementing. The first is really a critical path item, and most of our clients are implementing this today, which is finding that single source of truth. We have it for financial information, and so for ESG information, either aggregating it and including it in your financial systems or setting another one is really important. Everyone should always go back to the same numbers every time, whether that's your carbon emissions or your diversity information. The second area are calculation softwares, often around environmental information. Historically, much of this information was held or housed in Excel spreadsheets. It was collected and then manually calculated, and then there was a number that came out on the back end and was sent through email. These calculation systems help bring more control and more rigor around that process, both to house the information they're collecting with cloud capabilities, as well as to have more standardized calculation procedures built into them. Thirdly, we see governance systems used to track controls that are put in place and that they're actually operating effectively, as well as to certify the validity of the information that's coming through. And lastly, one of the hardest problems that we see to solve is really that raw data collection. Around environmental information, we're starting to see companies implement meters at the source, whether that's at the factories or the facilities in which operations are actually occurring. But of course, this is a huge investment and it takes a lot of time. But one of the major benefits is that you have the data on a real-time basis and you can make good business decisions based off of that information. So I just gave you four different types of technology to think about and the people that you need to power through your ESG reporting for this year end. But the reality is that none of this is going to happen overnight. So considering those three cost areas, the question is, how quickly should you be moving to get all of that in place? The reality is that this isn't going to happen overnight. So to some extent, it can be driven by knowing the timing of regulatory requirements you'll need to comply with. And while we always say you shouldn't wait until the regs are finalized to get started, knowing when they will be effective does help to provide the bookends to your journey. Moving on to number four, Julie will talk about the key points of those regulations that you need to know so you can build them into your plans.
Okay, well, let's start with the easy one first and talk about what's happening at the SEC. The SEC has now published its full regulatory agenda. And while these are not hard deadlines, they're estimating currently that we'll have a final climate rule in April, as well as a final cyber rule, and also a human capital proposal. The next big estimated date is October this year, with final rules for investment companies on ESG reporting and also a proposal on corporate board diversity. So that takes care of what's happening domestically, but it's really, really important for US companies to think about the international scene. Not just if you've got subsidiaries overseas, but also if you're doing business, if you're selling into Europe, into other countries. Internationally, the International Sustainability Standards Board, is coming closer to the end of its re-deliberations of two standards, one on climate and the other on general sustainability disclosures. And I'll just give you one data point that strikes me. They have decided to require the disclosure of scope 1, scope 2, and scope 3 GHG emissions. And that's something that's been hotly debated in the US. But let's talk about what's happening in the EU. This is closer, and this is potentially far more far-reaching than what's happening internationally at the ISSB. We now have a final corporate sustainability reporting directive. We are only waiting now for it to be transposed into EU member state law. That comes, the first wave of reporting under that is 2024 for reporting in 2025. The first 12 draft standards have been completed. They require some 1,100 disclosures. And climate is just one small part of that. So we're looking at very, very extensive reporting. But if that wasn't enough for you to think about, let me leave you with one other thought. You can't just think about ESG reporting. There are also the requirements, if you're selling into Europe, for example, the questions you're going to get from your customers. So you've got to think about the supply chain laws that are starting to come into effect. Already in effect in Germany, and we see an EU proposal asking suppliers about their environmental credentials, about their human rights credentials. So this goes way beyond reporting. This can strike at the heart of your business strategy. And now we see the provisional EU carbon border adjustment mechanism, really looking at the emissions of goods imported into the EU. So basically, the bottom line is, do not make the mistake of thinking this is all about domestic requirements.
That is a lot to digest, Julie. In fact, I'm hearing with many of the US companies that I'm speaking with, they're actually more concerned about the impact of international regulations than they are with domestic regulations. And now we know why. So Anita, it's time for you to wrap us up. With SEC comment letters, DCP, investment, and international regs in mind, what can companies be thinking about doing now?
Yeah, thanks, Maura. I mean, I've always been a believer of hope is not a strategy. So certainly I'll leave with our audience that if, you know, you're hoping that regulations won't go through or the scope of the impact of the regulations might be smaller than anticipated, that's unfortunately not a viable option anymore. And I could understand and definitely appreciate, right? There's a lot going on. It could be overwhelming. But maybe one way to think about it is you can start small, but start now. So maybe I'll leave you with two practical suggestions that you could consider. First is get a good assessment of your current state. Really get a good inventory of the ESG information that your company currently has in the public domain. And I would say, definitely try to look beyond the traditional ESG report, check out the website, look at even social media, and then compare that inventory to the information that you currently have in your SEC filing around sustainability or ESG in general. Also, make sure you leverage the staff's comment letter that Julie talked about earlier, especially as it relates to climate, to think about what areas you could potentially have enhancement of your existing disclosures. The second thing is I would anchor back to the cross-functional teams that I spoke about earlier. I would encourage you to start building that team now to identify the right talent and making sure there's someone on that team who can actively monitor and digest the many developments that's happening around the world and think about what might be applicable to your company. I think it is very important to have that knowledge as the company continue to refine the process and controls that you're starting to build so that you're ready to have that ability to quickly adapt when things continue to develop. And then that would enable you to tell the best story that you can to actually reflect what's happening with your strategy as well as your operations.
That's some really great advice, Anita, particularly that hope is not a strategy and that we need to start acting now. two things that you said: start by performing current state assessments and building a team to tackle what is to come, I think really does help provide a solid foundation, no matter how or when the rules are finalized. So as we close, I know that ESG reporting can feel incredibly overwhelming. I mean, we've just covered our top five with multiple bullet points underneath each one. But as we look to the future, I do want to encourage you that I think we really are entering a new era of reporting, one that is more streamlined, and its ultimate goal is to communicate the right amount of information to the right stakeholders at the right time, and then through the right mediums. We're already beginning to see it. You know, we've just talked about how regulatory reporting is going to include investor-grade sustainability information. But then the question is, what do we do with all that other information that our stakeholders are demanding? And my prediction is that it will be through dynamic, real-time data available on websites for customers, employees, and suppliers. But we need all the infrastructure in place to get there. We're beginning to reimagine the future of reporting at KPMG, and we'd love to have you join us on this journey. Thanks for listening today, and best wishes for a happy, healthy, and successful 2023.
Thank you for listening to this KPMG Financial Reporting Podcast. For more in-depth ESG-related financial reporting developments, analysis, and podcast episodes, type into your browser visit.kpmg.us/ESG reporting and be sure to subscribe today.